Met tonight's speaker a while ago. I heard him speak the other week at Northside Young People's, and he had a fucking powerful message, a really, really powerful message. And I remember when I first met him, he just had a beginner's mind, if that makes sense to anyone. And I don't mean that in a bad way or anything like that, but his mind was open. You know, he'd say something, and you'd say something and come up to you after the meeting and he'd be like, "Hey, dude, tell me about this. What's going on with this? Like, this is my experience. How do you get here?" You know what I mean? And it was really cool because I didn't know this guy from anyone else, you know, but he was just there, dude. I don't even know how long he has sober, honestly. He might have more time than me, and I'm saying he had a beginner's mind, and hopefully he doesn't take that in an insulting way, but I think that's a beautiful thing today, you know, to have the mind of a beginner, even with time. So you guys are in for a really great treat, and with that, I give you Rob Thomas.
I appreciate the intro, definitely, man. I'm flattered to be here. I enjoy doing this so much. It was a couple weeks ago. It's the first time I told my story, and I had such an amazing time doing it. So bear with me if there's any hiccups or anything along the way. You know, I've struggled sometimes with trying to tell exactly my story in AA sometimes because I have such a deep, profound, you know, respect for AA. I appreciate what it's done for me. It saved my life. But tonight I will talk about drugs. I'll talk about alcohol. And I'll talk about God. You know, the most important thing is that you look for some of the similarities rather than the differences anyway. A lot of people are, you know, they get real pissy about, you know, drugs and alcohol. And for me, I know that the effects has the same effect on my life. And, you know, that life was a shitty life. You know, I can go on and on about what it was like out there and how, you know, drunk and fucked up I got and how much bad shit I did and how many people I hurt. But a lot of the stories that I've heard, a lot of it is the same thing. There's nothing I can sit and tell you to impress you about what I did. But I'll tell you a little bit about it just so you can get an understanding of what my experience was like. And just so I can qualify myself a little bit, you know, to start off with some of the things that happened that had a profound effect on me to make me who I am today, that's what I'm going to touch on. And just to jump in there, I was molested from the age 6 through 8 by a male neighbor, and, you know, the repercussions of that experience on my life really didn't start affecting me till I was around 13 or so, a little bit older. And, you know, growing up in my household was an absolute nightmare. I have a mother who she's a very, very sick person. She's one of us, too. And she absolutely refuses to get help. And I remember when I did my resentment, she was the number one on my resentment list. And still to this day, I have a hard time coming to terms with the way she was to me growing up. She held everyone in our household in absolute emotional and psychological terrorism. I never knew what to expect from her, and when I was just a little boy, I had to walk around on eggshells because I never knew how she was going to be. And what mood mom was in determined what kind of mood I was going to be in and how I could feel about myself. And so, you know, over time I developed this, I guess it's a, you know, it's a defense mechanism, or it's a way to navigate life where I base how I feel on how you are. And, you know, that's very hard for a little boy because I don't know what's going on. I don't know how to feel. I look up to you look up to adults to kind of guide you. And the only thing solid I had in my life was my father, who to this day is my very best friend. But he always tried to protect me and shade me from my mom. But, it wasn't always, it's not always possible. You know, she is a very sick woman psychologically and physically. And she treated me like shit my entire life. And she would go out and buy me all these clothes and buy me all this stuff to try to make up for the times where she would, psychologically just abuse me. And over time, as a little boy, your brain and your personality and everything, it develops, and it's so, it depends, what am I trying to say? It is so influenced by these type of things. So this is kind of the man that I grow up to be. You know, I'm an only child. Besides, some of those issues, I mean, I had a good life. You know, I've heard a lot of people say about feeling like they never fit in and they never felt like they belonged anywhere. And I relate to that because that's the way I always felt. And so, I never had this clear identity of who I was supposed to be. And as, I'm 13, 14, I start having these really strong feelings of the molestation coming up. And so I start really questioning what I am and who I am. And, I naturally feel like that's my fault. So I ended up getting some therapy and felt like I dealt with it pretty well at that point, and I go on and I always worked really hard in school. I had some good friends. I never really had an issue doing that, but I just always, I can remember being, like 8 and 12 and 13 and looking in the mirror and thinking, God, you are just one ugly son of a bitch. I was little, and when I was, and that is not a natural thought for a little kid to be thinking, but I was always so acutely aware of that, and I wanted to play sports, and I sucked at that, and I couldn't do anything, I couldn't do all this stuff. I thought that if I could play sports, and if I could, be on the football team or do this, then I could get the cheerleader, and the girls would like me. And so from an early age, I have this sense of if I could just have this and that in my life, and if it was just right, then I could feel okay, and I could validate what I, what I thought I was supposed to be. And so, I go through school. I was real involved. I mean, I've always loved school, and I love reading, and I love music. But, I started getting, shit really took off. I can remember when I first took my first drink, and I knew at that point that that was it, and that was what I was always looking at, and I was home, and that was always going to take precedence. But I started, hanging out with a lot of bad kids and stuff, but I also worked so hard at school that I could, I made good grades, I was involved, so I could kind of take the light off of me and say, well, look, here, I'm, making good grades, I'm doing all of this, and I get busted for buying pills, and, when I'm in ninth grade at school, and I go to this alternative school, and, parents are pissed, and, fast forward, I ended up going to college, and I worked my ass off in college, but I partied like a banshee. I worked hard and I played hard, and that's what I always did. And I always had this feeling that I loved drugs and I loved catching a buzz more than anything out there. There was nothing else that could validate me better. I started, would have these relationships with women, and I see this pattern developing where I would find these really, really beautiful women, but they were really shy girls, and they were really, very passive women that I could manipulate. And so I thought that, well, if I had this beautiful girl, that I could feel good about myself, and I had the right combination of booze, and I could have pills, and I would feel okay about myself. And it wasn't until I met the love of my life my sophomore year in college, when I had a hernia operation and I was prescribed pain pills. And at that moment, I knew that I loved the buzz of a beer, but at that moment I was done for. I'd never, ever, ever felt so happy in my entire life. And it was amazing. And throughout school, I still, worked my ass off. I was involved a lot in teaching lab and stuff at Auburn. And I'd come home on the weekends, and I'd steal all my mom's pain medicine, and they'd catch me and they'd be like, "What's wrong with you? You know, is there something wrong? Do you have a problem?" And I'd be like, "No, no, look, I'm making all these good grades. I'm real involved." And so that pattern develops over a period of time that actually did, you know, it was bad for me because I had this track record where I could prove how good I was being, you know, and, you know, it's really not an issue. I was taking it, you know, I was hurting, etc. I graduated college and ended up moving to Nashville to play music for a while and was just absolutely miserable because I felt alone and, I didn't feel like I could, I didn't have the girl, I didn't, you know, I just felt like crap about myself. And I ended up meeting this girl that I ended up going to school with. I lived right down the street with her. And I saw this woman and I said, you know what? She looks like Audrey Hepburn. This has got to be the one for me. But really, I could not carry on a conversation with this woman at all. And I can remember standing, we were together 8 months and I decided I'm going to marry her because I can get a little picket fence and I can have this house and I can have this wife and that would make me happy. You know, all the while I'm continuing to get heavier and heavier into my drug use and drinking, you know, every day because I had to. It was not an option for me. I pulled the wool over that woman's eyes so hard and most everyone around me because that's how I operate. I developed the, the skill of being able to adapt so well to my environment that I can be whatever I think you want me to be. And I can talk about this and I can talk about that and, you know, make you think that I know what I'm talking about, that I can fit in and I can get acceptance from you. Because your acceptance of me is more important than anything that I'd ever done for myself. You know, and I base what you think of me on myself. And I found out early on that if I carry myself in a particular way, I can make you think of me how I want you to think. And so the point is, I start just developing and getting more and more into this pattern of manipulation, lying, and basing my happiness on things that are doomed to fail. And I can remember standing at the altar on my wedding day and knowing that it wasn't going to work while my groomsmen behind me are secretly making bets on how long this would last. My best friend in the world, who was my best man then, sat me down when I told him that I was marrying this girl, and he's like, "Chris, man." He knew me. He knows my pattern. He knows, you know, my one failed relationship after another, and he said, "You know, Chris, this isn't right." And I'm like, "No, man, this is it." And, you know, it wasn't even a year till I was sleeping in my man cave on a futon with the cat. Because she had kicked me out of my room because I was such a lying asshole manipulator. And, you know, all of a sudden, she finds out that this kid who was, this guy that was perfect, you know, this guy who was everything she wanted, is sitting there, you know, snorting sleeping pills in the bathroom and, you know, teeth purple stained from drinking red wine all day long, you know? And the pieces don't add up after that. But then again, at that time, I decided to go back to nursing school. I decided to go to nursing school, and I'd written this essay and got a full scholarship, you know, and I could just still prove to everybody that I had my shit together. And how I made it through nursing school, I have no idea. Now, I was president of my nursing class. I had a great GPA, but I was so messed up the entire time. You know, they called me in one day and said, we want you to take a drug test. And I did it because I knew I had the prescriptions for everything that I was on. And they're like, "Well, okay." You know, I'm like, "Well, I'm just tired." I mean, how many times have you used that excuse? "I'm just tired." You know, all the time. That was it. "Now, I'm just tired." You know, I worked my ass off. Ended up getting a badass job right out of nursing school. And, you know, my habit, see, the way it is, it's kind of like a chameleon because I can change what I need. It really doesn't matter what it is. If I can abuse it and it'll make me feel good, I will do it because ultimately of how I feel about myself. And we'll get into a little bit later about the core of why that is. But ultimately, everything crashed around me. I lost everything. I came home from work one day, shit was gone, and she told me that, you know, we're done and I'm filing for divorce. The last time I spoke to that woman was the day she told me that that she wanted a divorce. And that sucks because, you know, I would love to let her know that I take responsibility for my actions. And it is a two-way street. She had her stuff too. But the point is, in the span of 3 months, I had lost my job at the hospital for stealing drugs that I was using intravenously. I had lost everything and I was back home with my family in Mobile. I took everything I owned, pawned it to get enough money to buy enough dope to go home to Mobile and sit on my bed and drink a handle of the cheapest shit and just contemplate my demise because I was done with it and I was tired and I was miserable. And the overwhelming thing was I just felt sorry for myself. I lost my house and my nice car and my badass job and I was embarrassed. Really wasn't, you know, all the destruction and in my wake that I created and all the people that I'd hurt. I felt sorry for myself. And, you know, long story short, I ended up, you know, my parents ended up catching me after I stole all my mother's pills, you know, for the millionth time, and they were asking me if I had a problem, and I came clean with everything. I go to treatment for 3 months, I get out, and I went to this halfway house in Birmingham, and, you know, got kicked out within a week for shooting dope again and drinking, and so I had to go back to treatment for 2 weeks before they sent me up here to a great place over in Smyrna where I ended up staying in 11 and a half months. But the first week that I ended up coming back up, I ended up at the halfway house in Smyrna, I started drinking. Because for me, what pissed me off so bad was that I knew I did not need to do, you know, the dope and I didn't need to do that, but I should be able to drink. That pissed me off. I think a lot of people who have some other issues struggle with the fact that there is, you know, that they should be able to drink and have a beer. And sometimes, you know, I would sit out and I'd look, you know, at people on a patio eating, drinking a beer, and it would piss me off that I couldn't do that. You know, but those people, when they're done, they're not going riding down to, you know, Lowry and getting some shit. They're not doing that. They're not thinking about how much they wish that they could have something, and that's what ruled my life. And so, you know, you got to think, too, that with all these issues with, you know, nursing, I knew I'd kiss my license goodbye. There's no way in hell I'd ever be able to practice again. And, you know, they said, all right, Chris, this is your last time. You're going to go, go to safety net. So I do that. And I ended up getting busted again because I could not stop getting high. And, I'd been in the rooms and I'd heard all this shit and I'd seen the 12 steps and all this, but I could not comprehend in my mind how that would work. And because I couldn't comprehend it, it must not work. Okay? And so I get busted again right after I'd nearly died. I woke up in a trap house downtown with, you know, this guy doing chest compressions on me, you know. And that's just crazy that he didn't just dump my ass in an alleyway, you know? That's what should have happened. That's almost probably what I would have done. But thank God he didn't. And so right after that, I get busted, and I go back to the treatment center, and they said, you know what? We're done with you. We're not doing anything else with you. Let me check my time. All right, we're good. And I said, all right. And I didn't know. And I remember sitting there crying. And the woman that ran that looked at me and said, Chris, the reason you cannot stay sober is because of an inability to get honest with yourself. And I didn't know what that meant. But it's one of the most profound things that I'd ever heard in my life later on, thinking about it. And now it sounds simple, but I had these delusions of what I was and, you know, what I was supposed to be. And it did not fall in line, you know, it did not make sense. And I was one of the only people who couldn't recognize that. And this is one of the things that's proof of God in my life, is the fact that I stayed sober long enough to get sober from that point is an absolute miracle. you know, the presence of God in my life is a fact, and I know that because some of the ways I think today and some of the things I do are not what I do. That's not my default mode. You know, and so I ended up, ended up getting a sponsor, and I ended up working the steps with him, and it was awesome. My sobriety date is July 8th, 2011. And, you know, and I'll tell you that I had a lot of doubts about all of this, how it worked, why it would work. And my sponsor looked at me, you know, and he told me that I don't have to believe that it'll work for me, but I can, you know, at least believe that it worked for him. And I knew that this man had had a lot of trouble. He did some of the same stuff I did. And he's 7 years sober from doing it. And if this has had such a profound effect in his life and changed his life, that I believe that the steps would work for that the steps had worked in his life, and that was enough for me to start on, and I did it. And so kind of what I've been talking about is, you know, how I came up to the point of the first step. That's the beginning of all of it. It's the most crucial thing to accept the fact. It was the most crucial thing for me to accept the fact that I was done and I was totally screwed if I did not accept help, if I did not accept a spiritual way of life. I'm done with, and I'm still to this day, no matter what, done with if I don't continue to do the things I need to do to take care of myself. It is an absolute, you know, I'm so limited by my, you know, human power of perception and comprehension. Yet I, you know, want to place limits on what God can do for me. And I want to say that the, you know, step, who am I to say that these steps aren't going to work unless I give them a shot? And I was willing to do it because I was tired of feeling like shit. And I was willing just to try them. You know, I got a home group. I got involved. And I started, you know, meeting with my sponsor regularly. I started doing the steps. And I put my heart and soul into it, man. The first step for me was, you know, it was a real kind of profound moment because I can remember sitting in the halfway house when I first got there and wishing so bad that I was not a drug addict and a drunk. I love that line in the book where it says it's like men who have lost their legs are never going to regrow new ones. And I had to accept that I was not like everybody else, that I will never be like everybody else. And at that point where I was beaten in such, you know, into such a state of submission that I was willing to believe that, was the only point that I could go on. Because a lot of times people, you know, I hate, man, the fact that people want to come in and, well, not they don't want to, but they bounce in and out. And I think a lot of that has to do with some of us are more hard-headed than others. Some of us have to experience enough pain to be even willing to do this thing. And I know that's how it was for me. You know, but I'd had that. After the first step. Oh, hold on. Let me back up, and I want to say something real quick. Is that for me? A lot of people want to come in here and just go to meetings and hang out with some good people and do that. And I know that for me, it didn't work. You know, because like it says in the book, if a mere code of morals or a better philosophy of life was sufficient, you know, I'm paraphrasing. You know, it would have worked a long time ago, but it wouldn't, you know, it didn't for me. And my sponsor told me that the purpose of the 12 steps was to help me find a connection to God and that God would then keep me sober. Because that's what it says in the book that the whole thing is about anyway. It's not about getting sober. It's about finding a power greater than yourself that allows you to even live a life of sobriety, that even gives you a chance of happiness. And he said that the steps work just like drugs and alcohol did, except it works on the opposite end of the spectrum. It replaces that need to feel whole, to feel complete, to feel accepted, and it does that in a totally opposite direction. But it lasts longer, and it's more effective, and it works, all right? And, I mean, I could wrap my mind around that, and I said, okay. Because if you get sober and don't replace the drugs and alcohol with something else, it's not going to work. Or at least I found that for me, and a lot of the people I've talked to found that for, you know, themselves as well. Because this is not just about me wanting to quit the bad shit in life, you know, to quit having problems, quit doing all this. It's for me to have a better life, to have fun, and to live for somebody other than myself. Second step, came to believe that a power greater than us to restore us to sanity. My sponsor told me that for me to truly accept that, I have to believe that I was insane in the first place, that I was in a position to do that. And that makes sense to me because I know that the way I lived, the shit I did, I was sitting, when I went back to the treatment center for the last time, I was sitting there with the psychiatrist, and he was asking me what I thought I should do with myself now. And I said, you know, I think I'm going to go to medical school. After I had just been kicked out of several halfway houses. But to me, my mind said that, which is just another example of my insanity. You know, I never had a problem with God, but I always believed that God was this, I believe he was responsible for everything, but I believe that he just was sitting up on a throne somewhere, and he had no interaction with my daily going-ons. And to the fact, you know, that you could even have a personal relationship with God was one of the most abstract thoughts in my mind. And so doing that, I also want to say too, you know, when I sit and think about wanting to come and speak to you, sometimes I get wrapped up with wanting to say the coolest shit and sound really good. And sometimes it may not flow, and sometimes it may not be concise. But I'm going to speak from the heart, and excuse me if I, you know, if anything I say can't be reconciled with the big book, then toss it out. You know, the third step is one of my absolute, it is one of the most freeing things for me because, and it is kind of the basis that I build my whole program. It's the center because it is thy will, not mine be done. That the third step prayer is one of the most important prayers. It's my mantra on a daily basis. That it offers, you know, I love the way it says, relieve me of bondage of self. That I'm there are these promises that I will get, you know, and if I can only do his will and not think about myself, then I can be relieved of the bondage of self. I have such a hard time being me in the first place that is such a gift to me that if I continue to do what I know I need to do and take care of myself and try my very best to live God's will, that I will have some relief. And I've found that to be true, which is a beautiful thing. And so I know that the way I was doing things wasn't working. And I have all of this ample evidence to prove that the way I'd live my life just ends up in this huge wreckage and pain and misery. And so, you know, you kind of have to come to the point where you accept that truly, and you know it in your heart that a will, you know, a life run on self-will could hardly be a success. And I believe that because when I try to take over and run things, it always, always, always turns bad. I manipulate the people I care about. I lie to you. I cheat. And then I wonder when shit crashes down on me, why everything is so bad. Like, I can't make the connections between the way I'm acting, the selfishness, what I'm doing, and why it's bad. To think after losing, you know, I mean, a lot of people have lost houses and wives and all, you know, all that kind of stuff. But after losing everything, my best friends not wanting to talk to me, the people I care about not wanting to talk to me, to feel wronged in that situation, that's messed up, man. And I think a lot of people can relate to that, because that's what I do when I run my life on my will. And so I came to a place where I truly believed that, and I was willing to do whatever it took. Fourth step is a wonderful, wonderful thing for me, and I had a really eye-opening experience with the fifth step. But the fourth step allowed me to take inventory on the way I'd been living my life and make connections between all the stuff that's happened to me and all the things I'd done, and be able to take a look at the things that I had done and, you know, where I was responsible for the things in my life, you know, because that's hard for me to want to take responsibility and see the connections between all the things that had happened. And that's a beautiful thing about the fourth step, because you've got it, you've got your life right there, and you can make the connections and you can see where you'd been wrong in your life. Fifth step was I can remember driving home after the fifth step, and later on, you know, where you go home and you read with the sixth and the seventh, and it says, you know, you felt the nearness of your Creator. I had that experience, and it was really profound. Some people don't have, you know, it talks about the educational variety of spiritual experience, and what I thought at that point, looking, you know, back, I wasn't quite sure of. I know what that felt like. That was the beginning of a change in me. And it's kind of like, you know, there's a momentum that you build up in early, you know, in early sobriety that's important to carry you on, and a lot of that is God's grace. But that's the importance of, you know, going through, doing the steps and getting on it, you know, really, 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 really hard. You know, when I was in treatment the first time, my dad got diagnosed with lung cancer, and they did surgery on him, and I couldn't be there for him because I was stuck in an institution. And this past August, this cancer came back, and they were doing more surgery on him, and I could be there for him, and that was, you know, that was a wonderful thing. That was a wonderful experience to me, and so I have this evidence that doing this thing reaps the benefits. And a lot of people, in a lot of meetings, read the Nine Step Promises. And I can remember thinking when I came in that I didn't really care too much about those promises if I could have just had the obsession removed. And damn, did I not forget to talk about the allergy and the mental obsession in the beginning. Well, damn, if you don't know, this whole thing is based on a spiritual malady. is manifested, I mean, it's a spiritual malady. It's manifested by physical allergy and a mental obsession. And if any of you understand intimately what that mental obsession is like, then you know, I mean, I've never been, that's the definition of hopelessness, is that mental obsession and trying to do this thing and thinking that there's only one thing in this world that's going to make me feel good right now, and I know where to get it, and I know what to do. And, you know, back to those promises, you know, I wanted a lot of the shit, you know, a lot of people I hear, you know, do this shit just to have those promises come true, but I wanted the obsession removed. And that would have been enough if that was all I could get. And, you know, by the glory of God, it has been removed, and that is the most freeing feeling in the world, and it's only through doing the steps that I was able to achieve anything like that. So, you know, going on through the steps, and, you know, I don't do step workshops. I can't, you know, speak as eloquently and articulate on those things as I would like, but I know that my experience with them, you know, some wonderful things. 6, 7, you know, 8. Go to the amends. We'll jump to the amends. You know, I can remember not wanting to do the steps just because the amends, some of the amends that I had to make. And I remember the first time that probably had a lot. That had a lot to do with me not wanting to do the deal. But that's also some of the most beautiful things that have happened in my life. Are some of the amends I've made. Some have been bad, some have been good. And one of the amends that I have not been able to do the way I wanted was my ex-wife. She wanted, you know, I've done everything I could possibly do to get in contact with her just to tell her that, you know, I know what I did and take responsibility for my actions. I can't do anything about how she was to me, but I just want to let her, you know, I wanted to let her know. You know, I've written her letters, I've tried to contact her, so all I can do now is in a living amends, and that's fine, I'll leave her alone. Maybe one day, we'll see. 10 step is another really cool step because it allows me to make adjustments on a minute-to-minute basis, really, or, you know, throughout my day to make amends for the things I've done wrong. Because there's, you know, I try to act in a way that I don't have to apologize for later. Because there's nothing worse I hate than having to come up to you and apologize for being a dick or doing this. You know, I hate that. You know, I don't do everything right at all, but I damn sure try. And I have a lot more self-awareness now than I've ever had in my life. And I'm able to, you know, look at when I was wrong and own that, you know, like a man. 11 and 12, 11 is a lot of 11 is one area that I want to do more growth in with the daily meditation. I have my own ways. My form personally is contemplation and of course prayer in the morning. But 12 step is one of the coolest things in the world. I sponsor a couple guys. I have a sponsor, and you know, that's it says in the book that nothing so much ensures immunity, you know, from that drink than working with another alcoholic. And that goes into, you know, for me with the third step, with doing God's will for me, you know, trying my best to do God's will. Because sometimes I don't want to meet with some people. Sometimes I don't feel like doing it. I just want to be a bum. But I always, always, always feel better after working with somebody. It's, you know, it's a formula that works, and it works every time. You know, today I still don't have my nursing license back. It will be probably, it will have been July, God willing, that I am, you know, that I stay willing and do it, will be 2 years, and I'll be able to get in the process back. But I ended up, it's, you know, another God thing in my life. I have a dream job that I absolutely love getting up every day and going to work. You know, my boss is in the program, and we're very close, and it's very cool. Today, I have a girlfriend. I can honestly say that it is the first healthy relationship that I've ever had in my life, and that is incredible because that's not how I work. And I always go for the wrong things. And part of it, you know, I was willing to be on my own and grow and do what I needed to do to get to the point where I was healthy enough to do this thing and to be able to be present in another person's life. One of the things that I took advantage of when I was out there using was the importance of the relationships in my life. That's one of the most valuable things that I've got, and you know, I hate to sound cheesy, but one of the things that I've learned is that the single most important thing in this life is love. And I have learned to love. I've got friends that I met in this program, you know, that I love dearly, and I can be there. And my old friends, some of the people that were there for me throughout the whole thing, I can be present in their lives. I can be a great son to my father. Man, and that feels good. The thing is, man, if you know, it says we're not a glum lot, and if you're sitting in the rooms or you're coming around and meet, you know, trying to do the deal and you're not having a blast, then you need to hook up with somebody who is having fun, man. Because, you know, one of my fears early on was that I would never have fun ever again. That was a, you know, that was a sincere fear that I had. But I have more fun today than I've ever had in my entire life. I have a blast. I can go anywhere and do anything, and the only thing that I need to take with me is what I have inside. And that's good, because before, I needed all of these external things to try to achieve some type of internal validation. And today I don't need that. I stay connected with a power greater than myself, with a higher power. I stay connected with people in the rooms, and, you know, I have a good time, man. And that is, man, that's a real miracle. And, you know, sometimes I look around and I am so amazed by how wonderful my life is and how blessed I am that, you know, it really seems unreal. You know, gratitude, as I've been told, is an action. and it's how I live it, and it's what I do, and it's what I stay willing to do. A lot of times, if you ever feeling down or you're feeling sorry for yourself, you know, my sponsor always told me to get up. You know, the best way to take my mind off myself is to do something for somebody else. And I try to hold true to that and do that. There are no promises with getting sober, but it's not about what you can get. But I know today I actually have a chance to be happy. There's no guarantee for any of that. Life still sucks sometimes. I still have to struggle with some things. I still have to, pay the bills of all the holes that I dug of debt back when I was, a dumbass. I'm still having to do that. I still have constant, reminders of the way I used to be. But now I have a chance, and life gets exponentially better. And I'm still new to this thing. You know, I still have a lot to learn. And as long as I stay willing, I know that, anything is possible. Stay willing, and not only that, stay teachable. You know, one of the things I did in early sobriety was surround myself with people who are better than me, faster than me, stronger than me, had more time than me, so I could hopefully glean, some little bit of knowledge on how they did it and, how they did it. And that saved my ass, man. There were some people that I've met. I mean, I'm from Birmingham, but I ended up staying in Atlanta for the, sole purpose of what a wonderful recovery community it is. It's something to be really grateful for, because there is so much going on, and there's so many young people and, whole, age range of people who are doing this thing. It's a really strong community, and I've met some people here that I've learned so much from. I've got people on my phone that are just spiritual dons, spiritual heavyweights that I can call anytime, and they always usually make time for me, and if not, they'll get back to me. And I just hope that I can remain in a position to, be of service to somebody at some point, if they ever need it. I feel like as long as I can do that, and things are going to continue to get better, man. This thing works, man. It really does. And it is, I get pretty emotional and, sentimental about this program because what it did for me. And I have a lot of respect for it. And if you feel like it's not working for you, then please just hook up with somebody who you think it is working for, because there are a lot of hopeless, doomed people that have found a new way of life that works. I see it in a lot of people, man. It really is a wonderful thing. And with that, I'm gonna close with that. And I want to appreciate everybody listening to me. And Bob, I appreciate you asking me to do that, man. I've had a good time.